Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Beth Healy, a financial investigative reporter with the Boston Globe, who has uncovered Mitt Romney's transformative 1988 business deal, which turned a $10 million investment into a $175 million profit for him and Bain Capital. We will discuss this deal that was financed by junk bond king Michael Milken, who at the time was under an SEC investigation that led to his conviction and imprisonment, a time Romney refers to as the glorious days of Drexel Burnham, quoting him, "It was fun while it lasted." Then the author of Land of Promise, An Economic History of the United States, Michael Lind, joins us in the studio. We will discuss America's economic history, in particular the current era we're in that began in the mid-1970s with the Great Dismantling, as Michael Lind calls it, an era where the household wealth and living standard of most Americans has stagnated or declined, while the wealthiest 1% have benefited from increased productivity, accruing most, if not all, of the additional wealth. Then finally, a Syrian-born filmmaker, Sam Cady, joins us in the studio, the director of a new feature film, The Citizen, which is about a Lebanese emigrant who comes to America just before 9/11. He recently testified before the International Criminal Court in The Hague about the ongoing slaughter of Syrian civilians by the Assad regime, atrocities which filmmakers like Sammy's murdered colleague Basil and others risk their lives to document. And joining us now is Beth Healy, a financial and investigative reporter at the Boston Globe, who rejoined the business section to do financial investigations in 2008. She spent several years with the Spotlight team, where their 2006 investigative series, Debtors' Hell, was a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Additionally, she won an Enterprise Award from the Society of American Business Editors and Writers in 2010. Welcome to Background Briefing, Beth Healy.
Thank you.
And you have an article at the Boston Globe, The Story Behind Romney and the Junk Bond King, deal with Michael Milken in the late 1980s, transform Bain Capital and the future candidate's business career. I find it extraordinary that one of your sources from Drexel Burnham, Michael Milken's firm, who actually did the deal with Romney back then, what, in 1988, said that Romney knew he had to make a lot of money to launch his political career. So all of this activity at Bain Capital was not just about getting rich, but it was about becoming president?
Well, I think everybody knew that he was a very ambitious man, and they didn't know for sure that he wanted to be president, but it was certainly a possibility given his father, and people knew that he had certain ambitions beyond making money, I guess.
Well, but does it mean in a way that you, I'm trying to get the correlation between making hundreds of millions of dollars and becoming the president of the United States. Is that a prerequisite? I mean, I guess we had somebody out here in California ran for a U.S. Senate, spent a couple hundred million dollars of her own money. But it's an odd thing that you would, that these things are being tied together in our current environment. But I guess it kind of makes sense with record amounts of money being spent on politics.
Yeah, of course, you didn't used to need this much money to be president, right? but he did spend millions out of his own pocket in the past when he ran for governor and for Senate.
So, Beth Healy, what was it that surprised you about this? Because Michael Milken, of course, is well known out here in Los Angeles, where he's based, and he made a considerable fortune and left a number of bankrupt widows and orphans in his wake, and then spent 22 months in jail, paid $650 million in fines, come away with a considerable amount of money because he's formed a lot of charitable foundations and think tanks, etc.
That's right. He has remade himself since prison and the downfall of Drexel.
So tell me about this deal then. This was just to set the stage. The environment is the early 80s, and we're told that Mitt Romney was a relatively cautious investor. It was in his fifth year in Bain Capital, but he decided to take a really high wire risk.
That's right. So it's 1988, 1987 when they first started working on this deal. This is a time when LBOs, leveraged buyouts, are becoming much more common. It's the high-flying 80s, and Bain was only a few years old as a firm then, and Romney was known as a very cautious guy. The firm had only done a handful of deals at that point, And then there's this opportunity to put together a couple of department stores down in Houston and create this company called Stage Stores. And basically, there was one guy that you went to in the late 80s when you needed junk bonds, when you were doing a risky enough deal that you couldn't just go anywhere on Wall Street. You needed the guys who could do a little bit riskier bonds. And so even though Drexel was under scrutiny by federal regulators by that point, Romney and Bain went ahead and raised $300 million. They put down $10 million of their own money and investors' money and borrowed the rest for this $300 million deal, and it was their biggest deal yet.
Well, but Romney and Bain managed to turn a $10 million investment into a $175 million profit.
That's right. It was huge. It was far and away their biggest deal. And this was really what turned Mitt Romney from the idea of kind of dabbling in venture capital and doing smaller deals and startups to saying, hey, wait a minute, the big money's over here in leverage buyouts.
So little wonder that in a little noticed interview that you dug up, Beth Healy, from the American Banker magazine, Romney said that he was working with Rexall Burnham in their glory days, saying it was fun while it lasted.
Well,
I should say it was also profitable while it lasted. But what happened to these stores? I mean, they put this deal together and then managed it for a while, and then they went public, and then some of the shareholders sued in 1999, saying that investors, including Bain, had inflated the company's stock. And then by 2000, the company has closed 60 stores, and then later in that year, they filed for bankruptcy protection with $444 million in long-term debt and had to close 300 stores and, what, lay off 5,000 workers. So walk us through this arc of the deal from which he profited and the collapse of this company, which eventually then reemerged well after he was long gone.
So the deal went well for quite a while. They put together Palais Royal and Beals, these kind of old line, small department stores, put them together, and the company was profitable and was doing quite well for a while. But then comes 1997, and Bain's getting ready to exit. They usually like to stay in companies for about 3 to 5 years, and this was getting to be about 9 years. And they'd taken a few tries to go public. They finally managed. The stock was doing very well. So June of 1997, Bain's still on the board. They agree for the company to do yet another deal that nearly doubles the size of the company. This is a big deal. But just a few months later, they were ready to go and had sold all their stock, cashed in, made a $175 million profit, and they were off the board. So in the succeeding 3 years after Bain got off the board, things went seriously awry. And, you know, what Bain would tell you is that they had nothing to do with what strategically went wrong when they were gone. However, they were there when the decision was made to expand so aggressively. And indeed, things did go wrong under the CEO those next few years. And they ended up having to, as you said, lay off thousands of people, close 300 stores. And the company did emerge from bankruptcy, but it was obviously a very bad time for a while there.
So specifically, Romney's doing a deal with Milken. Milken's before a federal judge, Milton Pollack, and by coincidence, the judge's wife, Moselle Pollack, is the chairwoman of Palais Royal, which is one of the companies that the department stores that Bain had bought and merged to create this, what was it called, Stage Stores or something?
Stage Stores, that's right.
Right. That's an extraordinary coincidence, isn't it?
It was pretty extraordinary. In fact, there was a rumor around at the time that perhaps Drexel had actually courted Bain to do this deal in order to create this kind of conflict of interest and sort of derail the case and get the judge taken off. But other people said that was not true, that you know, Drexel was not aware of the conflict before.
But the point here is that this is a window into a kind of methodology. It's not that Romney and Bain were the only people that were doing leverage buyouts, but it really, of course, is at the heart of this campaign, in as much as candidate Romney is running on the idea that he's the businessman who can fix America, fix a broken America, like fixing broken companies. But the record is, in terms of the deals that he made, in many cases, they fixed them for themselves. From a $10 million investment, they made $175 million profit, left the company saddled with a lot of debt, and eventually, in this case, they went into bankruptcy and fired 5,000 people. So I take it that this is a window into something that's going to be contested in this election between what Romney can claim and what the Obama administration can claim in terms of competing narratives about the value of leveraged buyouts.
Well, in particular, when Romney presents himself, as he often does on the campaign trail, as being a turnaround guy, as having been an investor who really got his hands dirty at companies and understanding how companies run. And that is very much what he's using to say that he could help fix the economy. But as with Drexel, he really was more the financier. He really was not the day-to-day person on the ground working on these companies, but he was someone who could make a connection to Drexel and, you know, on a handshake, get a deal done and do this very big, risky financial deal that ended up creating huge profits for Bain and for their investors.
So, again, I'm speaking with Beth Healy, a financial investigative reporter with the Boston Globe, and she has an article at the Boston Globe written with Michael Cranish, who, along with his co-author Scott Hellman, wrote The Real Romney. I've actually interviewed Scott when the book came out. Beth, you contributed to that book as well, right, as well as co-writing this article now at the Boston Globe, The Story Behind Romney and the Junk Bond King.
I did. I worked with Michael on the Bain Capital chapter.
So this period that Romney refers to, the glorious days of Drexel, and it being fun while it lasted. At the same time, the Securities and Exchange Commission were looking into Michael Milken, and eventually he did 22 months in jail and paid a $650 million fine. So, you know, I'm almost tempted to ask the old Watergate question in terms of Mitt Romney. What did he know and when did he know it?
I don't think that Romney knew you know, in particular about what Milken had done wrong, and, you know, the firm was under investigation for...
But he did know it was under investigation, right?
He did. He knew it was under investigation. Everybody did know at that time. And, in fact, there was a little problem that rose up at one point because the judge in the matter that the SEC was pressing with the firm, his wife, the judge's wife, was the chairman of one of the department stores in this deal. And so there was a whole issue about Drexel trying to get the judge thrown off the case. Ultimately, that did not happen, and it didn't end up mattering because the firm pled guilty. But there was really a moment here when there was quite a bit of anxiety at Bain, and they were saying, oh my gosh, what have we got ourselves in the middle of here? But they went forward with it.
Well, but it sounds like, just in terms of what happens when you are a company that's been taken over by a leveraged buyer, where they see value, they enhance value, extract the value for themselves. I mean, it's a new form of capitalism, at least a different form of capitalism, and it's very much what seems to be going on in Wall Street, you know, where we have a capitalism based upon the extraction of wealth rather than the creation of wealth. So how much wealth did he create for himself vis-a-vis how much wealth did he create for these companies? Because so many of them seem to have not survived.
Well, of about, you know, 100 companies that he worked on when he was at Bain or that Bain invested in while he was there, Bain made most of their money, the vast amount of the money, on sort of the top 10 and 20 deals. And something like 10 of them went bankrupt, and about a third of them, you know, didn't make money or else something else happened along the way to the company. But, you know, these firms, they make most of their money on sort of the top 20% of the deals. And I think it really does say something about what was going on in Romney's career that there was this point where they realized that by taking less risk, but by borrowing more money, they were able to do these giant deals And you absolutely can argue the point you're making. Did it do anything good for the companies, or was it only good for the investors? In some cases, Bain's type of investing has, in fact, grown companies, has added employees. In other cases, it was just a kind of financial engineering, and parts of companies got cut, shut down, people lost work.
But you have to add to that that this deal was done with a guy who was under investigation by the Securities and Exchange Commission, who eventually went to jail. And there were a lot of victims of Michael Milken. And, you know, and he paid a $650 million fine, but still somehow managed to have millions left over to become a new kind of charitable entrepreneur, if you will.
I mean, perhaps it shows how irresistible in a way it was to get pulled into this type of financing in the late 80s, because Bain hadn't done this particular type of junk bond deal until Tilstage Stores deal came along. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of set them off on their road of doing leverage buyouts, because they saw how incredibly successful it could be for them.
So, Beth Healy, one of the sources that you spoke with for your story with Michael Cranish in the Boston Globe, the story behind Romney and the junk bond king, this fellow, Mark Wolpow, who actually did the deal with Bain at Drexel, he says in your article that Mitt spent his life balanced between fear and greed.
Yes, he did say that. You know, I think Mark actually admires Romney. Mark is also, in full disclosure, a Democrat, mm-hmm. Although I think he may be supporting Mitt this time. I think Mark really saw this deal from both sides. He saw it from being, working at Drexel, and then he ended up joining Bain and kind of bringing that sort of knowledge, that Wall Street aspect to this firm that was really mostly kind of consultants and Harvard MBA types before Mark got there.
But given that Mark Wolpow also said that Romney had his eye on a political career and he wanted to make money in order to, I guess, finance his own political career, he was definitely taking a risk there, reputational risk, working with a company that was being investigated by the SEC.
He was. Romney would say that, in his mind, Milken hadn't been convicted yet, and therefore, why not do business with a guy who, so far hadn't been convicted of any crime? But it apparently upset the SEC, because it did kind of cause this whole problem in the case by having allowing Drexel the opportunity to claim that there was a conflict problem with the judge.
Mm-hmm. Well, just in closing, Beth Healy, obviously the story is going to become a part of the competing television hit jobs that the Romney campaign are doing and the Obama campaign is doing. And we live in a period in America which many consider to be the new Gilded Age. The disparity in wealth is great and growing at record levels. Do you think that there is some traction here in the subconscious of America? And one of the great ironies, of course, is that Tea Party was born out of the outrage of what happened in 2008. But I've never felt that the Democrats have ever established a really good narrative on really explaining this extractive form of capitalism as opposed to the traditional notion of capitalism, which is where you create wealth, you don't extract it for a few privileged individuals.
For sure, people are going to be evaluating Romney in this way, because he is presenting himself as the candidate who can fix the economy and fix the country by being able to fix the economy. And so what we tried to do was look at his business record. And so we've examined many of his deals. And this deal in particular we thought was interesting, just because it showed a moment of ambition, a moment of pivoting from sort of relative caution to embracing this high finance of the era. And it was when Romney really saw how much money Bain could make on a deal.
Well, Beth Healy, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Beth Healy, as a financial investigative reporter at the Boston Globe, who rejoined the business section to do financial investigations in 2008. She spent several years with the Spotlight team, where their 2006 investigative series, Debtor's Hell, was a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Additionally, she won an Enterprise Award from the Society of American Business Editors and Writers in 2010. She has an article at the Boston Globe, along with Michael Cranish, the co-author of The Real Romney, The Story Behind Romney and the Junk Bond King. We're going to take a brief station break and be back, joined in the studio by Michael Lind, the author of Land of Promise, an Economic History of the United States.
Chill.